AR, VR, and mixed reality. Metaverse, Web3. What is going to happen in the future? Now, how is UX going to evolve in the future? How does a designer be future ready? What is going to happen? Would design be even relevant in the future? Now, questions like this are addressed in this episode. Stay tuned and listen to Amit Shetty, who is the lead UX designer at Divami Design Labs, talk about exactly these things. I want to take this conversation to the future now, mm-hmm. where because the space is evolving. There are a lot of things happening. There's ChatGPT, there's Metaverse, there's AR, VR. Of course, we've been hearing these things for the past few years now. But Web3, now, what is UX? Now, interesting things that I've noticed, observations. I've seen Instagram ads. Mm-hmm. We will make you a AR UX designer. We will make you a VR UX designer. How to become a VR ready UX designer. Now, people are using these to sell, right? People are using these to sell because now the thought behind it, that is where the industry is heading, right? That is where I think Facebook has been working on it for past few years, and they've invested a lot of money. Meta has done a lot of work in it.
Like yesterday was their most like high they have gone in the last 10 years. Like yeah, their shares went
exactly
investment. I'm like, it's a little bit paying off for them now.
Yeah. So a lot of investment. Now we are sure shot headed that way, right? Now, what should the portfolios look like? Now, what should the mindset be? Before the portfolio, what should the mindset be?
So, like, this is one of my favorite things to talk about.
Mm.
And funnily, I am a person who doesn't have a design portfolio. Like, see, I have designs. It's just that all my projects are under NDA, so I can't reveal it to public.
Right.
Like, that's the industry fact, you know. And people, like, whatever work you see, like, in outside, it will be just my experiments or some of the old college projects like that. On my Instagram, I'll be randomly doing, like, this graphic work or something, right? But, like, for me, like, when I look at things, right?
Hmm.
A portfolio is like a film trailer for me.
Mm,
it has to be short. Mm. It has to be interesting enough for me to go buy a ticket and watch the movie. Which in our context is, it has to be interesting enough for the HR or the manager to pick up the phone and call you up for the interview.
Mm.
See, this is just my perspective. This is what I think, right? Your portfolio is just an entry ticket to the interview.
Yeah.
That's till their portfolio will come in. And the whole reason like people use portfolio is because, well, no one has so much time, right? If you actually look at, like, this is what I tell people who ask me how to apply for jobs, right?
Mm.
I tell them, you need to understand, when you apply as a designer, it might go to a HR. And that HR will forward your portfolio or profile to the manager. The manager would be someone senior working on multiple projects, multiple execution day in, day out. Now, if they want to spend some time on your portfolio, they will start looking at it. They will glance over it. They will never jump into depth unless and until something catches their eye.
Yeah.
Right? If they know, oh, this is a standard templatized, like, okay, same thing I have seen, I know what will be the output, they will skip. Unless and until, okay, your design quality or the way you are telling story is different.
Right.
See, the whole portfolio thing slightly, I would say it's still broken. Like, you know, we can't judge a person just on their current work. But then we also have to understand, at a large scale, things don't work very, like, you know, how we want. So there has to be a process. There has to be some automated system, and portfolios help companies to identify at what level you are. Right. So if you have potential, okay. You know, we look at, okay, someone is very good. They can just come in and start working. Awesome. Approve them. We look at a portfolio. We see that there's a potential. Portfolio is okay, but there's a potential that they can do better. Right? So let's call them for interview. Let's have a conversation. And then we look at the portfolio and we say, they don't even know what they are doing.
Yeah.
Right. These are the categories we look at. And that's standard.
Yeah. That's true.
Right. I had checked one of the portfolios and, you know, they had created a solution, and I just asked them a solution that, you know, in why did you come up with this solution? They are like, you know what? I like listening to music. I like doing this. And I'm like, yeah, but you need to understand, is it applicable in your context? Is that something which is going to bring customers to your product? Right. And is that even from an accessibility point of view, is it going to work?
Right.
Because see, when I review a portfolio, I don't review it as a, you know, okay, some student. No, I'm looking at a potential idea that will come into market.
Yeah.
Because that's what we are working on. That's what our livelihood is. We are developing products that people are going to use day in, day out. We are developing products which is going to help a business grow, earn money, pay their salaries.
Right. Right?
So when we look at portfolios, we also have to have that lens. Right. If we see potential, yes, let's take them in. And why I say it has to be, you know, like a trailer, because you can, the film might be like bad, you know, sometimes, but the trailer is interesting. You will go and buy.
Yeah.
Right. Your interview might go bad, but at least your portfolio got that call.
True.
And that is very important. Just getting that step in. So how do you approach this is very like, you know, I've seen people asking me, okay, how do I apply for a job? And I don't know if you remember, like in our earlier days, nowadays people just apply online. They apply from LinkedIn, send in an email.
Yeah.
We used to go to studios with our resume.
Oh, yes.
Physical.
Yes.
And say that, hey, walk-in interviews. See, engineering, that, engineering and all those still happen. Design, I see a lot of. And I tell people, see, if you are, let's say you are living in a city like Bangalore. Bangalore is the hub for design agencies.
Yeah. Lot of
startups, design agency.
Lot of agencies.
If you are so desperate for a job, why don't you just walk up to a design agency and say, can I have a tour of your company and talk to one of your design managers? I would like to apply for a job and I want to see how things work.
Absolutely.
Because if you do that, you skip the email line.
Yeah.
You go face to face.
Yeah.
You create an experience for the company as well.
Yeah.
Right. And that's people have to understand. Like, how do
exactly.
you do
this? Exactly. That's very well put. And I remember doing that myself for an internship. I did that in Italy. So after my master's, I just walked into this design studio. I had contacted, but I requested for a visit.
Yeah.
Because I thought I had to be there in person.
Yes.
I had to be there in person. I did not ask for an internship. I said, I'd like to visit. Is it feasible? Please let me know when I can visit. And then, it had a very positive impression. So definitely, I think that's a smart way. One can skip at least one step in the whole process. Yeah.
You put up your face up front.
Yeah.
They are obliged to reply to you.
True.
See, you can go in, you can talk about, hey, I don't need more than 15 minutes of your time. If you're, you know, design head, not even design head, some senior person can show me around, or you HR can show me around, because I just want to understand how industry works.
Yeah.
And people are nice. The design community is nice, right? We are all connected. We like to be together and we will never say no. I know a lot of people, you know, if they are applying to Diwami, they ping me and my colleagues on LinkedIn just to understand. They take that step to, you know, make an effort that, okay, let me talk to the people.
Right.
And very important thing sometimes people miss out on is you need to know which company you are applying on and what that company does. Just because it has an opening, you applied and then in an interview, you go and don't know what that company does.
That's the biggest blunder, man.
Right? Like, see.
Yeah.
At Diwami, we work with a lot of SaaS and enterprise. We don't work on B2C. Like, not at core. Like, that's not... We can work based on clients, one, but very picky about it.
Right.
Right? But with, you know, SaaS and enterprise, someone sends a portfolio of only mobile apps, which are like alarm app, like ticket booking app. I'm like, how do you expect me to, you know, make a sense or at least gauge your potential based on this to my company role?
Yeah.
Right. Where we are working on like data wrangling, you know, fintech products, insurance, and AI enabled AI ML technologies.
Right.
How do I understand that at least you have a spark to work with it with these projects, which are targeted to a completely different market?
Yeah.
So it's very crucial to understand, like, you know, who the company is, what kind of clients they serve.
Yeah.
Right. See, if I like some company, I go to their LinkedIn, I check out who the CEO is, who the CTO is.
Yeah.
Where have they studied? Where have they worked? Because that tells me a lot about, you know, how their thought process is, what can appeal to them.
Yeah.
Like, see, I come from Mumbai, right? Bollywood, right? When we were talking about films.
Yeah.
The way films are made in Bollywood is much different than the way films are made in South.
Hmm.
A Bollywood film necessarily won't succeed in South because the audience expectation is different.
Yeah.
Same with the company.
Right.
You need to go for a company which you think will match you.
Yeah.
Or if you are going out of the way, you know, you need to give a proper reason to them that, hey, you know what? I've been in this industry and I've been following your company for a while and I feel that I can be a good fit.
Right.
Because end of the day, all doesn't matter companies or anyone, everyone is looking for value.
Yeah.
What value are you adding?
Absolutely.
When clients come and hire an agency, they are looking for what this agency can add value to my needs.
Mm.
Right. Same thing a company is looking in an employee.
True. That's true. And this is where, you know, it makes sense when initially we discussed about what do you want to do? What is the company? What are the kind of companies? What is the domain that you want to work in?
Yeah.
You know, I think this solves this whole thing, you know. We have now completed the circle here because it now makes sense, right?
Coming to future of design, right?
Mm.
Well, there's always future in design. There's always something new and upcoming, right? Like there's no stop of relation. Like if you take AR, AR, you use it every day. You won't realize it. All your Instagram face filters, you know, these background replacement, they are AR tech.
Yeah.
Right? It's just that we need to understand when we talk about AR, MR, and VR.
Right.
These are all like... you know, what do you say? Realities, different realities, what we call it. AR is augmented reality, which is basically you perceive, you take real life, you superimpose something on that real life, you try to expand that experience via a medium. Like there's still a medium. Like you have a cell phone, you have a laptop, somewhere you can interact with that. Right? And then we have MR, which is mixed reality.
Right.
Right. So under mixed reality, you have like Google glasses, all these, your smart goggles. They are all mixed reality where they are projecting things on your reality and they are tracking your, you know, whole motion and then functioning accordingly. So it's still a blend of real life and, you know, the superimposed image.
Right.
Just that the experience is a little bit more deeper than a AR app.
Right.
Right. Because AR, you are still on a screen, but with MR, it's directly in front of your eye and you are able to interact it, even not physically, but you know, in still some, it's still more tangible. So the level of experience a user will go through is a little bit higher in MR. And when we go to VR, it's like you are replacing your whole reality with something new altogether. So that's like full immersion. So that's why VR is called like, you know, immersive technology. And that's the whole reason that, you know, someone will get completely engrossed in it. It all depends on how you define it. And that's the highest level of experience a user can get right now.
Yeah.
Like with the current tech, right, there might be, you know, future. I don't know if you would have seen like Ender's Game, not Ender's Game, Ready Player One.
Yeah, I've seen. Spielberg, right?
Yeah, Spielberg.
Spielberg, yeah.
It's like, that is a future that will come in eventually, yeah, where you have a full dive suit and, you know, you have machineries where you just put in and you live in the game world.
Yeah.
Virtual world.
If I have to quote an anime, it's Ready Player One.
Like Ready Player One is this one.
Oh, sorry. Sword Art Online.
Yes.
Yeah. Sword Art Online. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Like, yeah, we have like, on the anime side, we have like all these,
yeah,
stories going on, like the isekai and the,
yeah,
you know, online platforms, all these, yeah, games, worlds.
Yes.
Right? But it's all about your experience, your design. Like, doesn't matter for AR, MR, or VR. We need to understand we are designing for a space.
Mm.
It's not a flat screen.
Mm.
You are not going to interact with a flat screen here. Right? There's a sense of depth, there's a sense of, you know, movement, which is much more than just things sliding in, sliding out, right? So with each medium, it becomes deeper and deeper with VR being fully immersive, right? Sometimes like you would have seen all these videos where, you know, people are wearing VR gears and they are fighting and so they suddenly jump on the TV.
Yeah.
Right? It's that immersive, because mm-hmm, I've tried, like we have a Oculus Quest 2.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried that and you know, it's like it confuses your mind sense. I can tell you, like,
mm-hmm,
you know, there's so much, like you just sometimes you feel like, okay, what is happening? You can feel dizzy also. It's mm-hmm, that because your brain is not used to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not used to like suddenly taken from one place and changing the sense of direction and movement, right?
Right.
So that's where this comes in. So designing for AR, MR, and VR is all about designing for space and understanding in a spatial way how people will interact. And one of the best things I like in this is if you are actually a gamer, you already have that understanding. Because when you play games like all these 3D games, when you jump in, right? Especially if you play like first person game, it's already an immersive environment. You know, okay, if I click here, something will pop up. If I open this object, something will come in, right? You're just enhancing that and bringing it, making it more real time, I would say, right? So that is like on the AR, VR part. So we need to understand space, sound, camera movements, because now you don't have a screen to restrict your user to move around. Right? Mm. On a screen, they will just go from, okay, slide up, slide down, or exit the app. Right? You have other things where your space is the canvas. You can't have like too many controls distracting the user from the main canvas.
Right.
Right? That's why if you look at like, you know, whoever's looking at AR apps, all this Google interaction, once you open the AR view, like Amazon has started now, like even Flipkart last year, they started their try-ons, like you can check out the furniture and objects in your room. Amazon also recently started. Whenever you go into that mode, you only see the minimum amount of control that is required, because to give you that sense of space, they need to make sure there are no distractions.
True.
Right? That's where this technology comes in. So if you understand this concept of space, sound, and storytelling with, you know, movement, these technologies, you can dwell into these technologies. And recently, right, I've been looking at I've been talking to a lot of architects who've been changing, you know, from architecture to UX UI because, well, that's how their industry has been going on, and you know, they want to switch in and get better opportunities. And that's what I tell. I'm like, you guys have a sense of space. You understand, more than anyone else. Like when, like even at Divami, when we say we are hiring UX designer, we don't necessarily hire from a design school.
Yeah,
an engineer also works because we work with like complex projects. So someone who's from an engineering background will understand the concept in a much better manner. Like I still come from animation background. So for me to understand a data integration project, I'm like, first I need to understand what is data integration. What are the things that go in? Right? That code part, I might not even get my head around it. Right? I will just understand, okay, what is the concept? As long as I understand enough to design, that's okay.
Yeah.
Right. So with AR, VR, it's more of understanding of space. And there are courses. See, there are courses out there. But we also, and I feel AR, VR is like, from my perspective, is nothing but like you're just making games a reality. You are making everything clickable.
True.
Everything interactive, and you can add in more elements to life. And then we have Web3, which is a parallel. Right. See, AR, VR, MR, all these are contributing to a concept called metaverse, which is like, I'm saying it's a vision. It's still not fulfilled. The whole idea is like, if you take, if anyone is like interested, they can watch the Ready Player One movie. They will understand what we are calling as metaverse, where the whole idea of metaverse is, right now, if you know, all our games and applications, they are simulations in a smaller scale. Like we work, like, you know, let's say PUBG, which is like one of the most common. PUBG actually runs on servers. So it's not like every player is playing in the same space. It's a simulation run for a group of people in one, you know, confined space. And this simulation repeats itself. Right? That's the whole concept of metaverse, is that it's a real-time simulation happening globally. So it's literally like another Earth in a digital space. So whatever you do there will stay permanent, which is a long-term thing. Like it's still a long way to achieve because, well, as technology is improving and everything is coming, and it's good to know that. It's good to understand that. But we also need to understand metaverse coming to a regular Indian market is going to take a lot of time. Right? Like, one, it all depends on the devices. It all depends on the public who's comfortable with it. Right? It's not going to be your regular tier two, tier three cities are not going to use metaverse. Let me be frank. Like, you know, it's because for them, they won't see the point of it. Like, why do I need to put in and how do I increase? Like, for them, they are just getting accustomed to mobile and, you know, the computers and getting, like, they are increasing their more maturity in technology right now. AR and VR is going to be much more overloaded. Right? So that is the case. And we need to understand, okay, if you are doing AR and VR, which are the companies who are working in it? Like, there's Jio, Tesseract, and there are some other companies, but it's not a lot of companies who are there. Right. And what are the markets? Like, right now, all this AR, VR is heavily used in, you know, your education, because that's where it helps students visualize the concept easily. Right. They can see, they can interact with things. It helps them learn better. And on other parts, it's, you know, with the enterprise and factories and all, where it's helping people train faster. Like, even doctors are able to now do, like, there are applications where they can train in certain operations by using a VR application. It's like they're polishing their skills. That's, I would say. So we need to, like, whoever is looking into getting into this, they need to understand, okay, which are the industries is impactful, which companies are doing, and what is the basic requirement? Right. See, I have tried designing a AR experience myself. I can design the interaction, but it needs to be developed. Like I had put my hands on Unity. I could do only so much because it's so complex after a point. I was like, yeah, I need someone, some game designer to do it for me.
Hmm. True.
Right? So I've done that. I've like created an app where I can, you know, place things in my room and then make it big, small, or rotate it. Right? Click a button, a video will start playing.
Hmm.
It's very interesting to see all of it.
Yeah.
And on that front, Web3.
Yeah.
It's a parallel. It's Metaverse and Web3 are not the same. People have this conception, misconception, sadly, that it's the same. No.
Hmm.
If we look at the history of Web, Web 1.0, where internet started, it was a read only.
Mm.
Like people could read. Someone would post somewhere and they could read.
Yeah.
Right. Not everyone was able to, you know, post or do something. We could all just search and, you know, look at things. Web 2.0 came in where people could read and write. Mm. So you could edit your things, you can publish. That's capability. The whole Web 3 is you can read, write, and have ownership of your own data.
Mm.
Right now, if you ask any of the user, like I'll ask you, you have a LinkedIn profile.
Right.
But do you think you own your LinkedIn profile?
Hmm. Interesting question.
Not, right? Tomorrow, if LinkedIn decides to shut down.
Yeah. I do not own it. I do not own it.
Anything you post on any of these platforms, you are not owning it.
It's for example, platform. Like look at Orkut.
Yep.
It was there. We used to write scraps.
Scraps.
Yeah.
Testimonials.
Scraps. Yeah. So it's gone now. So we don't own it. We had profiles on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where we used to measure people, like, hey, how many scraps you have?
Yeah, I know, right?
That was the followers of that time.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? And it's very like Web 2.0. And see, the Web 3.0 vision is it's a decentralized. No, like they want to. Web 3 vision is decentralization. It means no one owns, like no one power owns it.
Right.
Your data is yours.
Yeah.
Right, like right now, Facebook shuts down, all your data is gone.
Gone.
You won't have access to your photos or nothing because it's in their property. You are the product they are using to sell advertising, and that's how they are earning money.
Yeah.
And when it comes to decentralized Web3 with blockchain, the whole idea is whatever you create, whatever you make, is still with you.
Hmm.
It is still assigned to you. Like we can get into the details of it, but you know, the whole, even it is complex for me. Like I still don't understand a lot of things. Like there's a lot many things.
Yeah.
But I would say basically, if I create an asset today, right? I created a toy. And I said, you know what? I will give this toy to a person who owns my digital toy.
Hmm.
So you don't have to buy the physical one. Whoever owns the digital one, they will get the physical toy. Right? Now you created a digital token saying that this is the proof of authenticity.
Right.
Right. See, people say that, you know, one of the examples I give is you can have a picture of Mona Lisa with you. You can click a picture of Mona Lisa, but you don't own Mona Lisa.
Yeah.
Right? The original, the authentic one is with the museum, right? Like that's where, and the creator is Da Vinci. We all know that,
right?
In Web 2, what happens is sometimes you come across an art, which is somewhere you don't even know who created it. But with Web 3, the whole idea is you can track things from the time they are generated.
Right.
If I make something, like I have made an NFT series and I have launched it on OpenSea.
Mm-hmm.
Only one person bought it, one of it, and it's still there. That's how the whole thing is. Like the whole part is like the market is flooded with people just making things, right?
Yeah, I know.
People do buy. But whatever I have put, as per the Web3 thing, is the original thing. Like that's the digital token of ownership. So whoever buys it gets the ownership certificate that you own this. But I am still the creator. Right? So you can sell it. Like it's, if you want to understand Web3 NFTs specifically, you can look at how art dealers work. That's exactly how you know, NFT space works. In a more transparent way.
Absolutely.
But with the whole Web3 idea is things have to be decentralized. Right? It has to be like you can actually sell your house or vehicle also on Web3. In medical terms, right now, if you see, like there are a lot of researches go on, right? And they require a lot of patient data. So right now what happens is hospitals who have tie up might give your data with your authority. They take sign up, but you don't know what is happening with that data. But with Web3, the whoever the research lab is can directly request you what data they want, and you can enable only the data that you want to give.
Right.
You can say, hey, I will give you this data and you can use it. But I am still the owner of that data. Anytime I feel I don't want, I can, you know, retract it. But
beautiful.
That whole tech, it's a vision. Like it's a long-term thing. It's not there yet, like what people are visualizing, but it's growing. And that's how any technology, you know, takes time to, what do you say, bloom?
Evolve and bloom.
Right? It's like it's one space. Like right now also with the whole NFT space, with all the mergers and all, there are still conflicts because still things are centralized in a manner, not fully decentralized. But the place where Web3 and Metaverse comes into, you know, they merge together is how Metaverse wants a a whole simulation to run, and that is decentralization can help it. So let's say you play games, right? In every games, we get like our outfits, weapons and everything. But are you able to transfer from one game to another?
No.
But what if you own an NFT, which you can transfer from one platform to another? Like it's seamless. That's where the Metaverse and Web3 space comes in. And that's how like people are doing it. Like you see, like there's a Roblox is a platform where Nike and Zara, they have established their digital stores. And digital spaces where people can experience the brand. See, it's still for people who are a little bit more, you know, friendly with technology and who like experimenting. Eventually it will, like there are efforts already to make it more practical.
Interesting. I think you have pretty much explained it in very simple terms. Whoever watches,
but it's a lot complex. I would say once you get it, it becomes mind boggling. But yeah, that's basic. I could boil it down to.
But I think you've done it beautifully. It's like, you know, breaking it into pieces and just making them understand the basics of these things, so that they understand what is happening right now and what is going to happen in future. So an interesting space for a designer to be, especially when we create things. So we'll be creating for something that is not existing now and evolving. So I think the power that we have becomes much more, the value of it increases as a creator, as a designer, right? So that's amazing way to end this discussion, because this has pumped me up to actually do a lot more research about it. I've been reading a lot about it, but yes, super excited to see what this space has to offer. And with that, I want to close this episode. We have discussed quite a lot of things today. And thank you for taking out time for this episode. And also sharing your experience as a mentor and as a designer as well, and your journey, because it's very interesting. I'm sure students will definitely relate to this, because quite a journey you've had from animation to, you know, UX, which is very, very different. We don't see many people doing that. And then, you know, leaving something behind which you've worked on for 8 years, and then, you know, leaving it because it wasn't what you wanted to do, just goes on to prove the point that your interests can change with time, and it is okay to take that shift also, to follow that.
Exactly.
You know, so thank you for sharing that story. It's very inspiring and definitely has made me feel a little more passionate about design today, for sure. So thank you for doing that today.
I'm just glad, man. I'm so honored to be on your show and, you know, talk about things, and you listening to me for almost 3 hours now going on and on. But thing, like, you know, it's all about, you know, we have done things,
yeah,
we have experienced certain way, we,
yeah,
are sharing it, and,
yeah,
whoever watches it and listens to it, and hope we are able to, you know, help even 1% in their life. And
yeah, absolutely,
more than enough for us.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That was about the future of design. Now guys, if you like what you're listening, and if you think that the content is good, please go ahead and review and rate the podcast on Spotify. That would really encourage me to create more content. And if you think you have an interesting idea to share, interesting topic that I can talk about, please feel free to reach out to me on Instagram, which is SanjayReddy144. And that's it for now. I'll see you in the next episode.